You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hello, and welcome to Hungry Society. I'm Korsha Wilson, and this is the show where we talk about food, food media, and so much more. Today's guest is Lee Ann Martin, born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago, a chef that lives in the New York City area who creates dishes that merge her Trini upbringing with New York's culinary landscape. She currently contributes to Arc Republic, is a curator of a private dinner series called A Table for Four, and has worked at events from the James Beard House to the Bowery Residence Committee teaching healthy eating. Lee Ann,
yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm very excited to have you here.
I'm super excited as well, too.
Because I had the pleasure of dining at one of your private dinner events, and it was just like such a beautiful experience so delicious.
Thank you.
And also because I think this episode is going to double as an ASMR edition because you have one of the most beautiful accents I've ever heard.
Well, you know, I tell people, because they're like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from Trinidad. And they're like, oh, you don't sound like a Trinidadian. And I say, well, I'm not drunk as yet for you to really hear, you know, the entire Trini accent come out. But I try to speak slow so people could understand when I speak, yes.
Well, we have a bar here. Yes. If you want to do a shot of rum so your accent, like, really comes out.
And then you're going to be like, I didn't understand a damn thing she said, but it sounded good. That's so funny. But thank you very much for having me.
So tell listeners about your dinner series. How did you come up with it and what's it like to experience it?
So my dinner series started last year. Last year was one of those turning points in my life. I needed to get my life and really, start producing and showing my talents and showing the love of my food, my country's food, West Indian food. And at first, I was like, ooh, I should do this and ooh, I should do that. And I was like, you know what? When you were blogging about cooking at home for people, food enthusiasts, cooks, home cooks that want to cook and they cook at home. So I said to myself, why not do a dinner series in your home where people could come and see exactly where I create the dishes, where I take pictures, where I sit on the mornings and drink my tea. And that's kind of where it was birthed. And I named it A Table for Four because my dining room could only fit four people at a time. And from there on, so I kind of like the sexiness and the secrecy of it. So it's, I don't necessarily put it on, I don't advertise on social media, but I do use some of my contacts that I've met from social media, my network, my colleagues, and my email list from my blog. And so far, people have been really receptive. I do four courses paired with wine each course. The wine I get from this super cool black female-owned wine shop in Brooklyn. The woman's name, the owner, sorry, her name's Heather. And Tanya Hopkins, she's like the wine, rum, spirits like whisperer, and she really helps me just curate and just find the best wine to go with my spicy food, my sweet food, my complex seasoning food. And it really, really people are really open to the flavors that come out. And I tell them, you know, I show them, you know, take a bite first, then take a bite with, and then sip the wine, and everyone's just like, oh, this is so explosive and I love it. wine, I feel like, you know, wine is still vegetation. So I don't think I had to only pay my Trini food or my West Indian food with rum, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. And last year, it took a couple breaks because I was working a full-time job in finance. I've always ever had either a full-time job in finance or accounting. So, and then last year, I was like, I'm going to resign.
Yeah, you're one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is because you are one of those like rare stories of people who are like, you know what? This isn't it. This ain't it. I'm going to the Caribbean.
So you know, when you hear people's story and they're like, yeah, you know, my 9-to-5 just wasn't for me. I loved what I've done when I worked at one of the top 4 accounting firms in the country and at the finance company that I worked at last year. I loved what I did. I just had this burning desire inside where I'm like, I just was not feeling fulfilled. And I was just like I make a joke with my friends and I'm like, oh, there's more to life than a 9-to-5 and waiting for a man. You know, it was, I wasn't feeling fulfilled at all. And I said, I want to travel back to the Caribbean, starting with the West Indies, and figure out my style of cooking and, you know, speak about the food through scenes of Caribbean life. Mm-hmm. And from, you know, I had to flush this goal out a lot last year, but that is what I started with so far this year. And I'm very, very excited that I was able to take the leap and, you know, resign from my 9-to-5 and create some opportunities for myself to go back to some, you know, a couple countries. And
Your piece that you wrote for Arc Republic is it at the start of your journey? In Grenada.
Yes.
And you went to Grenada?
So I went to Trinidad, Grenada, Barbados, and I had a planned trip to the French Caribbean, to Martinique, but that just made sense to kind of go. I only went for 4 days, but it did wet my palate for you know, the rum, the agricole that's out there, and just their production of rum and how they grade it and the amazing lush vegetation that they have and their culture out there. So that was really, the 4 days went by fast, but it was a really good kind of entry into going back there and kind of figuring out, okay, this is what I want to concentrate on. This is what I want to learn. This is what I want to learn. I'm happy that I was able to go out there with my friend who spoke French.
That helped, I bet.
It would have been pretty limited as to the experiences that I would have, you know. But yeah, that's it so far. At the end of May, I'm going to London, but I am going to be cooking traditional Trinidadian food, and I want to meet some people to speak about like diaspora cooking in London, because that's also big. I'm going to London to assist my friend. She's a caterer, and she's going to be catering a wedding, and it's a huge wedding. But it's interesting because at these very celebratory festive events, we always kind of go back to like traditional food and, you know, family style. And I think that's so important because we're doing a very traditional Trinidadian West Indian menu. And in 2009, you would think, you know, all these people, they would want, you know, they would want more of the Italian-influenced dishes or the French-influenced dishes, but they just wanted a menu that spoke to their parents' country. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was good. So I'm not going back to the Caribbean, but I am going, all my travels is going to be aligned with the goal.
I mean, you're going to somewhere that's been influenced by the Caribbean and a lot of different Caribbean countries and a big way.
Yes.
Can you tell us what's on the menu?
So on the menu, it is very traditional doubles, aloo pie, bacon soulfish. Then we have paratha, aloo anchana. We have curry chicken. We have stew chicken, macaroni pie, palau. We have the salads, and no, you know, seat at the table for any type of lunch would be complete without a Trinidadian pepper sauce.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we are, and we're cooking for 300 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a big wedding.
Yeah.
300 people.
300 people, yeah. So I'm going to be dead to the world the day after.
Right. Yeah, don't plan anything for the day after.
No.
So what is it about the Caribbean and the food of the Caribbean that really speaks to you? I mean, you grew up in Trinidad and Tobago, but, you know, you could have just been like, oh, I'm going to quit my job and move back there.
Yeah.
But you decided to see other islands. Like, what is it that...
You know, last year I was having a lot of conversations about there being some type of blueprint to Caribbean cooking. I felt that a lot of times I would read on social media that everyone... were saying, oh, this is my version of. But in my brain, I'm just like, well, it can't. I mean, it's the same technique. It should be the same technique, regardless of what you call it or, you know, things like that. So I wanted to go back and kind of figure out for myself, is there one universal blueprint for Caribbean food, which there isn't? And, you know, what are the exclusivities in the foodways of that country? So, for instance, Grenada, their national dish is oil down. The national dish is oil down in their country. And the oil down is really meat and vegetables cooked with turmeric, cooked in coconut milk, and is cooked down until the oil in the coconut milk comes to the top. So that's the meaning of an oil down. But the way how Trinidadians cook oil down, or Jamaica cooks a dish similar to oil down, which they call a rundown, is so unique to that country, and the ingredients that they put is according to what time of the year, what cuts of the animal, that type of thing. So that was also a really good way for me to, the travels was a really good way for me to see the differences, the uniqueness, talk to the people, see how they eat, how they also celebrate their crops. That was a really, really good way. Also too, just to see, you know, the island and how the people live, and figuring out myself through all of this. So I came back, you know, with so much renewal, and I've had two dinners so far, and I didn't come back, you know, putting a fritter, like a Bajan codfish fritter on my menu. I think that's bullshit.
Bullshit because it's been done?
It's been done, and it don't make no sense. I spend all this money to go away and I put a fritter on my menu. That not making sense. That makes no sense. It doesn't make sense to me. However, I was able to, you know, make this, like, one of the dishes that I cooked so far was a molasses braised oxtail. Because when I went to Mount Gay, and, you know, you heard about rum and the molasses being the runoff, and, you know, in the West Indian Islands, we stew with, starting the stew with brown sugar, and I wanted to just have the molasses play a part in there, because it's positive that they didn't have the luxury of stewing back then with sugar. So I'm sure that before the slave owners knew about this black gold called molasses, I'm sure they were using it in their own way to stew their meats as well, too, their meats and their vegetables and their rice. And that was just a beautiful, beautiful dish. I even inspired my mother, and she was like, oh, Lee, I think I want to make it, you know, which is very, like,
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's really big.
Caribbean women are notoriously stubborn.
Yeah, my mom, she's not done with the shits. She is not done.
So for her to be like, oh, I will try something new. I'll try it your way.
Yes, that was really, really big. And I also have a recurring dessert on my menu. I got the inspiration from a mango chow. So a mango chow in Trinidad is essentially it's a salad where it's ripe or half ripe fruit, a little bit of lemon, garlic, peppers, toss it up, you eat it. So I took the inspiration from a sweet, acidic, salty, and I made a mango cheesecake with a scotch bonnet caramel sauce, and I made a garlic and culantro kettle corn. So you have the sweet, you have the heat, you have the garlic, you have, and it was just like a mashup, and just like, I think everyone just loved the fact that I'm kind of recurring and bringing that dessert back on the menu. And I was also like, this time everyone was just like, oh, although when I was cooking I was like, oh, I think I burned my caramel sauce.
Oh no.
And everyone was like, this is amazing. And I was like, okay, I'm just gonna just keep in my corner and like pretend nothing ever happened. But I have this, I came back with this renewal to not only cook for people, but to, and not only to experiment with, you know, flavors and things. Because, I mean, I'm not reinventing the wheel. The shit has already been done in some way or the other. I'm just showing and figuring out certain things that I could do with the ingredients that I have in New York, and based on like my recollection and my memories, and just getting it back and just creating just like this amazing nostalgic food for people that when they come at my table, they could, you know, speak about their Caribbean grandmother or their Italian grandmother and how she cooked food, and you know, ingredients that they've never had up until this night, or you know, them not ever having grits cooked with coconut milk, drank with like, you know, Albarino wine. And yeah, so it's a really good time. Yeah,
I'm glad you mentioned grandmothers, because I think Caribbean food has this I mean, you see it in other cultures as well, but with Caribbean cuisine, like most of the people who are highlighted for like pushing it forward are people in restaurants in the Caribbean, and it's, you know, usually men who are, especially with social media, you see mostly men who are making Caribbean food. And there's this whole history of Caribbean women laying the foundations of Caribbean food and kind of being pushed aside or forgotten. Do you notice that as well?
So, yes, because there is there's a female chef in Trinidad. Her name is Deborah Sardina Mitive. Yes, I hope I'm not getting her last name wrong. She was the first female chef, the head chef of the Hilton in Trinidad, and that's a big deal. She also instructed the Trinidad and Tobago Culinary National Team, and she has a restaurant. She had a catering company. She comes from a background where her mother and father, they still have the restaurant in Tobago. And if it wasn't for Dr. Jessica Harris, I would not have known about her, because I guess she's not at the forefront, but she has shaped the culinary landscape in Trinidad, and I would not have known. Whereas in Trinidad, you hear about the other male chefs, no disrespect to anyone, but that's all you hear about, you know? Even in my family, my grandmother, we always went to my Grammys for everything. She made the best guava jam. She made the best cocoa tea. She could make the best toast bread and butter that you would ever have in your life. But still, like, I remember my father being the one on a Saturday, cooking cowhill soup in the yard, and all my brothers could cook, but in my family, it was never like a rule thing where it was like, well, only Grammys could do this or only my dad could do that. It's only since I got more into the industry than I realize. Yeah, but there is that, and I definitely see that within the Caribbean food scene as well too. Mm. Yeah.
Do you hope that you're able to not reverse some of that, but do you hope that you're able to expand the conversation to include women?
Well, so far, a couple of years ago, I was able to go to St. Lucia to judge their preliminary competition while they were trying to form their culinary team to go compete. And so I was out there working with the St. Lucia Hotel and Tourism Association. And I know they have a lot of initiatives, especially within the schools, chefs in schools, all these things. So I know for a fact that they are really working to having a lot of girls be interested in not only pastry and not only doing, you know, dainty flower works and stuff, but really wanting to get involved with media and wanting to, you know, man the grills and just understand more about the industry. I can't say too much for Trinidad because I just recently started creating networks in Trinidad for me to understand the landscape more. But I would like to be involved with the conversation, with just having our cuisine just get that respect. But before we get that, before we ask for that respect, I think we have just a little bit of house cleaning that we need to do before we, you know, go there.
House cleaning in terms of addressing some of these things?
Just, you know, us having more of a one collective when it comes to West Indian food or Caribbean food, and not just looking at the exclusivities per island. I think we are definitely better if we come together. You know, having somewhat of a collective would really assist with training and talent share and organization management and, you know, people within these islands who want to, you know, give in any area, regardless if it be philanthropy or whatever, like mm-hmm. they could come together and really do that and it not just be just like one island, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's the housekeeping that I'm speaking about. Mm-hmm. But I think Caribbean food, West Indian food, Trinidadian food, we're looking good. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff happening in the Caribbean food wise. And you know, a friend of mine, Digby Stradiron.
Yes,
you know him, chef in St. Croix.
Mm-hmm.
He did start the West Indian Chefs Alliance, but I think it is also includes chefs who are in the US mm-hmm. or in London mm-hmm. or in any other parts of mm-hmm. the world. So, mm-hmm. you know, something that is Caribbean specific could be very interesting.
Yeah, I think it. So, you know, I tell people, so at first, even with my goal of heading back to the Caribbean and traveling, I think I had to zone it down to just the West Indies for now. Because, you know, back then when I was like, oh, there has to be a blueprint to Caribbean food. No, there isn't. And I think the Caribbean islands is just so big. I have to kind of zone down.
Mm-hmm.
So when, you know, I know the initiative that Digby started, but I still don't understand it kind of, because I feel like, which islands does it include? Who does it include? You know, that type of thing. But he started it, so I'm excited for that, mm-hmm. you know?
And maybe you can start one, too. I'm just putting it out there.
Put it out there. Please put it out there. Yes.
out into the universe.
Yes, yes, yes. And that was, so I was able to, when I went to Trinidad, I went to go see Buju Banton in April, and I was able to, meet up with a really good person within the industry in Trinidad, and hopefully a lot of things could be birthed from that meeting.
No, oh, that's exciting.
Very, very exciting.
And did you drink rum there at the Buju Banton concert?
I didn't because, you know, logistically the bar was just too far. But I did drink a lot so far. No, I really didn't.
What?
The bar was too far.
So wait, what did you drink?
At the concert, water. Honest to God. No.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was just way too much, man. It was way too much. But I had a really good sober time at the concert.
Okay, well there's that. we're gonna take a break and possibly do a shot of rum.
Yes.
And we'll be right back with Leanne Martin.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Coming this May from Heritage Radio Network, the surprising stories of how artists, activists, and entrepreneurs collide in one special Brooklyn community that's changing faster by the day.
I am 28 years old. I live in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
When I moved to Brooklyn, I chose Bushwick randomly.
We recently opened up in Bushwick.
All over Bushwick.
Bushwick. Brooklyn, Bushwick.
This is Bushwick Podcast, a series that takes you behind the scenes of how people in kitchens, shops, and countless other community spaces create New York City's most dynamic neighborhood. Each week, we step into the journeys that define Bushwick and break down the forces competing to shape its future. These are local stories like you've never heard before. Join us this May, wherever you get your podcasts. So
right, so we are back with Chef Leanne Martin.
Hey.
So now we're going to talk a bit about your relationship to dining.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if your family had any dining traditions growing up.
Dining traditions growing up. So it's interesting because so my mother worked in a mess hall and worked in a restaurant/cafe. So we've always had, as my mother would say, like buy food, because if it's not cooked, it's bought. So she would call that buy food. So she would always bring that home. So we would always have like ends of like marble cake or chocolate cake or like callaloo on a Wednesday, stewed chicken, that type of thing. But going to restaurants and dining in the restaurants, yes and no. Mm-hmm. It would mostly be fast food. So I remember for Carnival Monday mornings for Juve, Daddy would take my brother and I to go see Mud Mass, and after Juve we would go get KFC, or on a Friday or Saturday. So there's this chain in Trinidad called Pizza Boys, and Pizza Boys has Burger Boys, and Burger Boys has Donut Boys.
Oh wow, they stuck to
so I remember like on a Friday evening or Saturday Daddy would take my brother and I, and we would go eat pizza and burgers, and we would like go play like in like the little kids' playpen. But for the most part, we would buy food and bring it home. So there's a very big Chinese population in Trinidad. We would buy that and bring it home. On a Saturday, Saturdays, you know, my mother wouldn't cook, so we've always ever had either soups on Saturday or roti. Mm-hmm. So as we got older, my brother who's a year older than me, when he got his license, he would like go around to like different roti shops in Trinidad, on like the southern part of Trinidad, and we would try different rotis from roti shops. But growing up, it was, there's rice at home, like there's food at home. And then, you know, like I remember my mom making like hot dogs for like hot dog Fridays and stuff like that. But it was always where the food was bought from the restaurant and we eat in the house as a family. Yeah.
So for listeners who don't know what carnival or juve is, can you tell them what that is and so, the importance of that in Trinidad?
Carnival is that time before Ash Wednesday. It is, well, for Trinidad, it's a season starting in September. So the carnival season starts September, where your band launches, music, that type of thing. But the carnival is from the Thursday before Ash Wednesday to the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday. And it is revelry, there is heritage, there is culture, there is jam and wine, bacchanal, there is also juve, which has a deeper story. But what my father took us to go see in San Fernando was just people drenched in mud and oil, and they are chipping or dancing slowly up High Street from the wharf, I think it is. I've never played juve, but I think that's what it is. You know, and they would knock bottle and spoon or old iron, and they would like dance behind a music truck. So that is what we went to see when Daddy said, "Let's go see juve." And I think he would just get a laugh when we would see like the Devils or the Jab Jab coming up with all their fake blood coming from their mouth, and he would just get a laugh about that. But that's, yeah. But carnival, when it comes to like food, I remember carnival just having that air, that spirit in the air. I remember making, shelling fresh pigeon peas with my mother to make pilau and stew peas. You know, we're a pork eating, we love a good pork, so there's salted pork, roast pork, stew beef, all these things around carnival. You know, there's still that Christmas crop of sorrel that's finishing, so you have that in there. You still may have poncha creme and these things from Christmas, so you may have that coming into the carnival season as well too. Also, that's when the mango trees would start blossoming, so you would smell the mango flowers in the air early in the morning. I remember there used to be a particular, well, it's a citrus that we call, some people call it Portugal, some people call it Portugal. I can't remember the, what it's, but it, yeah. and I remember going in the back and, you know, cutting Portugal and oranges and making fresh squeezed juice for carnival, because my mother, she gave me a very short leash. So I remember spending carnival with her, but her emphasis was more on cooking for carnival so we could enjoy the experience at home. So she would make pizza and she would cook and she would make, you know, pork dishes and everything. But and that you would go to all these festivals and all these parades, and you would have the corn soups, mm-hmm. the cow heel soup. You always have doubles. The Rastafarians would make what we call peas pie, which is just like dough, and they would stuff it with seasoned dal and seasoned lentils, if I'm not mistaken, and they would fry it. And yeah, I could really only remember food when it comes to carnival.
No, that's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
So do you go out to eat much now? Do you have any favorite places?
You know, when you live in New York, we're a eat out. That's a eat out culture city right there. So although last year I resigned, I did come back into the country, and I did get a part time job with the same company that I resigned. They called me back.
Oh, they must have liked you.
Thank God. Ooh, Jan, no. So when I come home, I have to pass Dean and DeLuca to go to Port Authority. Mm-hmm. So I get my dinner there all the time. The restaurant that I used to work in, Butter, they moved from downtown to Midtown, so it's not too far for me to go there. There is this there's this restaurant not too far from Bryant Park called The Dress that I would go there. They have like a really nice mushroom salad. Or on a Saturday mornings, I would get up from New Jersey and I would go to Brooklyn and eat doubles. Or there is this place in Brooklyn that my niece really likes called, I can't remember the name of it, but it's really informal. It's just super chill. The food is good. They have like roasted meats and stuff. It's really, really good. But to say go out and there be like this one good fine dining, no, I would cook in the house. Yeah.
Where are you going for doubles?
To A&A doubles.
Okay. I was gonna ask what's your favorite.
I remember going there, like leaving Jersey really early in the morning. That's before they got the new space out on Fulton. And they had this tiny little walk-in, and the owner would put a bench outside, and I would sit on the bench and eat doubles. And then right around the corner there's a West Indian market. I would go make a little market and I would go back to Jersey.
Yeah. That's a good Saturday.
But, you know, the double's so good, and you get that craving. And it's like, I need to go into another state and get this fix, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I could go out to Queens, because Queens has a larger Indo-Trinidadian and Guyanese
population.
And that's where you get the good stuff. But I don't know Queens. I don't know Richmond Hill. I don't know it that well.
Any listeners who know the area and want to escort
around
to try the food, please get in touch.
I really don't know the area at all. Yeah.
So I have some questions that I ask every guest. Yes. So I'm going to ask you about your worst dining experience. And you can name the restaurant if you want to, but you don't have to.
Interestingly enough, so I've never had... When it comes to, so far in the city, I haven't had any worse. It's just, you know, service has been really slow, or, you know, the fruit that they said I was supposed to get ended up being 3 pieces of strawberry, you know, things like that.
Yeah, disappointing.
Yeah. I've never had anyone, any server or anything, you know, make me feel a certain way because of the color of my skin or anything. I want somebody to act crazy with me.
You're looking for that.
No, I'm really not. Yeah, Lord, I'm not looking for nothing. But when I went to Grenada, it was just the worst. My time in Grenada was beautiful, but at this one spot, the service was so slow. The food was so subpar.
Oh, so it took a long time, and then when you finally got it,
yeah,
it was bad.
The only saving grace was that it was on the beach. And it's a beautiful spot, beautiful ambience, but and things like that, I don't blame my server. It's all management. And because I've had all these years in as an administrative professional, I'm always like constantly seeing, okay, organizational structure needs to be, you'll need to work on policy, you'll need to work on certain things, you'll need to work on when staff is out, who needs to cover what, that type of thing. But you can't go there unless, you know, the staff has the zeal to even work and that type of thing. So that was the worst. That one really stood out. Mm-hmm. And it's really unfortunate because my time in Grenada was the best. But that one was just, and the food was just not the greatest at all. Yeah.
I mean, it could be worse. You were still on the beach in Grenada.
Yes.
You could have been, I don't know, Port Authority.
Yes, with all the bums and
subpar meal.
And in the winter and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah. So my last question for you. If you could have your last meal in a restaurant, where would it be and who's invited?
So I was thinking about it and I'm like, can I get like two meals?
Because it's your...
So I feel like because one meal would have to be with... Because, you know, the turn up is different.
Yes.
So the turn up with my family is different from the turn up with my friends. So I would want for my first meal, I think for both, I'm going to want to have it in someone's backyard or like a river or a beach or something like that. But for the first one, I would definitely want my Grammys to be there. My ma is definitely, because she's going to be like project manager. My dad and my Trinidad family, my Jamaican, Nigerian family in Georgia, my New York family, my Wisconsin family, my Jackson, Mississippi family. And then, so what, we're going to have just like traditional food, no frills.
Who's simple. Making it, you or your mom?
Me and Ma. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she wouldn't have it any other way. It's just going to be mad chill.
What are you drinking at that meal?
Juice. Because my family doesn't really drink. My brother has this amazing collection of whiskey. But it's like, we don't really drink. Mm-hmm. So just like juice and water. My family's really big on tea. So we have tea and stuff like that. That's why I tell you, like, the turnip's different.
Right.
So that will be like the family turnip. And then the friend turnip, is going to be either like a forest area or like beach. Because, you know, I have to set, yeah, I want just like this big old table. It could be a potluck or it could be where, yeah, I think a potluck would be nice. And I would just like cook most of the food. I would rather cook. And it'd just be like super simple. Well, like, I'm not a simple person, so let me not even say that.
Right. This doesn't sound simple. A potluck in the forest is not a simple way to end things.
And that one, going to have enough rum, enough tequila, wine, but really like homemade wine, like fruit wines and stuff, because we're going like Caribbean. And then I would really like, and again, like my Jackson, Mississippi people has got to be there. My Wisconsin people has got to be there. My New York people.
Oh, so some people are going to both dinners.
Yes, because they're family. And you know what I really want there? I really want like a guy on a pan just playing music. And I want Derek Walcott there because I think he would be just like a really good person. I don't want him to like recite anything. I just feel like his life is like amazing. And so I want him, and I want David Rudder, who is a Trinidadian Calypsonian. And I may want him to just do like a couple acapellas.
Okay.
And then I want like a bonfire in the night. And then we just lime and just drink. Oh, no, I may want a third dinner.
Okay.
Because that third dinner, I may just want that by myself to reflect. Mm. And my third dinner may have to be at Butter Restaurant, because that's my family. And I just want a glass of champagne and a steak.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that, I like that a lot.
And I'll
that's
be good.
Really good.
And I'll be good.
So how can listeners support you and find your work?
So they could follow me on Instagram. They could follow me on Facebook and on Twitter. Disclaimer, on Twitter, I say whatever comes to mind. but Instagram is where it's at. My website is there. They could sign up for alerts. I'm almost done with my second article for Arc Republic. And they could holler at me, slip into my DMs. I'm down for brunch. I'm down to go eat roti. I'm down to go eat
that.
Doubles.
People sliding into your DMs.
I know. And then you see me on like some like CSI or something.
I wasn't thinking you were going to die. I was thinking people, just men asking you out.
Well, I am single.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
here we go. Listeners.
I am single. So I'm okay for a conversation at a coffee shop.
You
know what I'm
knows?
Saying? Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Listeners, you heard
that.
It here.
Yeah, I'm fine
Slide
with
into
that.
Leanne's DMs and get coffee.
And let me giggle and share it with all my friends and be like, look who slid into my DMs.
Oh, you don't have to tell them that. Thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you so much, Kosha.
This was a blast. You're welcome back anytime.
Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you.
And thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week on A Hungry Society.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.